Now that the game is done, it's our time to check in.
Well, we're talking about the ultimate heist here if the Bucks can steal this game.
Bucks Talk starts now.
Sends it to Lillard at midcourt. He's on his back foot, throws up the desperation heave, and it misses. Well, we've seen some wild ones through the years. That was about as wild as it gets to start the new year.
And now, live from Fiserv Forum, here's Justin Garcia and Brandon Snide.
Disappointing, to say the very least, here for the Bucks, and these are the games that, Brandon, we talked about before. I don't know if you can truly say this is what costs you a seed line yet, but you got to get the win back somewhere, because I think it was the New Year's Eve game. We talked about this on the post-game show. Mm-hmm. Going into February. So once this month ends for the Bucks, it is by the numbers. John Shulman of NBA.com puts together a comprehensive look at the month each month. And what are the takeaways? Which teams have the most back-to-backs? Who has the hardest schedule? Who has the easiest schedule? Who has long road trips? And so on. The Bucks, by the numbers, had the easiest schedule of the month in January. And now you start 0-1 against a team that is playing for the lottery and has beaten you three times now this season. But once you get out of January, you got 35 games left starting February. And 32 of those 35 are against teams that are either in the playoffs or think they're going to be playoff teams. So the point of all of it is you can't let losses like this pile up. And I know you were without Giannis and Damian Lillard for two of them, but you've now seen three in the last week. And, you know, we haven't fully gotten into the, is this the hangover from Las Vegas? Look what happened to the Lakers last year. The Pacers got a little bit of a bumpy start afterwards as well. I'm not willing to entertain that just yet, because I think there's so many caveats that apply to this, but I mean, if you're one that was in that camp that thought, look, this isn't good for veteran teams, you would point to what the Bucks have done since.
Yeah, Justin, I'm with you, man. It's a very frustrating loss. To be quite honest with you, there's no excuse for it. Brooklyn played last night. The Bucks did not. They had all three of their stars playing in this one. They were at home. You're playing against a team that not only is in the lottery, but seemingly trying to tank for a better chance at the lottery.
Yeah, I mean, Brooklyn is saying, look, what else do you want us to do? We have traded just about every player that has had a big game against you.
And you knew, like, coming in, like, Cam Thomas and Cam Johnson have killed the Bucks, throughout the course of this season and last season in part two. That was the only way they were going to win this game, and you allowed both of them to kind of have a 26 points from Johnson and 24 from Thomas. And you mentioned it, the third time that Brooklyn has beat the Bucks this year, second time in 8 days, and that hasn't happened in 10 years, Justin, where they have beaten the Bucks three or more times in the regular season. So it was very disappointing. I know on Tuesday you and I agreed that in 2025 we would have a game ball despite a win or a loss. Tonight, again, just a very bad loss. Great effort late, I guess, coming back.
I know it's not my thing, but I would give the game ball to Marjon Beauchamp and Pat Connaughton for what they gave you. The anecdote that Doc shared in his post game about Pat continuing to put in the work. It was vintage Pat Connaughton with that block that led to a dunk. But Marjon Beauchamp, I know I've talked with Marcus Johnson about this, and Doc Rivers echoed it too, that, look, if he's going to play defense like that, mm-hmm. he's going to have a disruptive spot on this team. I thought it was noticeable, the job that Marjon Beauchamp did on Cam Johnson when he came in the game, because Cam Johnson was getting a lot of corner threes. Everybody the Bucks tried to throw on him just didn't seem to bother him. He's got great length, but so does Marjon Beauchamp, and I thought he played him very well.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that, and I can don't have any issue with that game ball going to those guys. And the one that I have it going to is in part because of he played Pat Connaughton and he played Marjon Beauchamp. And that was Doc Rivers. I thought, again, you could have the argument, well, he didn't have his team ready. They gave up, they were down 24 points to a team that's trying to lose. And a lot of that is like the players got to play. Like, I think coaching is overrated on both ends, you know, good and bad. There's good things that coaches can do and they have done, and there's, you know, vice versa. But I love that Doc was willing to kind of go to the end of his bench, and he had mentioned Pat Connaughton in the post-game press conference there in the work that he was putting in, you know, away from the game, and, you know, coming to the court, you know, on a Sunday and running laps and whatnot. But I thought his lineup, Justin, late in that game, I believe it was Lillard, Rollins, Prince, Giannis, and Gary Trent Jr., which I believe is the smallest lineup he's played throughout this year. That lineup kind of got him back into the game.
Yeah,
they went on that 9-0 run with that lineup. Gary Trent Jr. hit a couple of big threes. And also, you got to give Doc some bonus points for the two for two on challenges tonight. And that one late was kind of a no-brainer. You're going to kind of use it or lose it, but it got the Bucks the ball back and an opportunity. And the out-of-timeout play was fantastic. You know, Damian Lillard probably hits that shot, Justin, 9 out of 10 times. The one time he didn't was obviously to tie the game up. But I got to give a lot of credit to Doc Rivers. And I know I've come on here a few times and said he's the right guy for the right job. And I don't think enough people give him credit for what he does, not only for this team, but throughout the course of his career. But, you know, I thought he had his guys going real hard. Marcus Johnson made a comment in the game. It was about 6.5 minutes left. And he's like, I don't think Doc Rivers has given up on this yet. That was when I think they brought in Marjan and Pat. But he mentioned, you know, that Giannis and Dame were still out there, and he thought that was interesting. And I thought Doc Rivers was excellent tonight. Obviously, you want them to win the game and be a little bit more prepared against a team that's trying to lose. But, you know, players got to play. And Damian Lillard and Giannis weren't great, you know, together throughout the course of this game. And, you know, going forward, it's got to change. You got to stop losing these games that they should be winning.
855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. A disappointing loss tonight, 113-110. They lose the season series to the Brooklyn Nets and lose out on an opportunity to get some separation here for some scores that we mentioned earlier on the postgame show. We'll get to those scoreboard updates and a couple of moments that felt like the turning points in this game up next on Bucks Talk.
Welcome back to Bucks Talk.
.113-110 the final here. Brooklyn Nets beat the Bucks once again. A game that had a lot of feels to the previous two losses to the Brooklyn Nets. Similarities to that loss last week, the day after Christmas, and especially in the first half, a lot of similarities to that third game of the season the Bucks lost in Brooklyn earlier this season. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. Let's head to the phone lines and check in with Dick in Port Washington. Dick, what do you have to say about this one?
Well, I've got two comments that I want to make, and I want to listen to you guys talk about them. I think that the Bucks have continued to demonstrate that they're an average team. They can either go into the play-in tournament or maybe make the regular tournament, but they're not going to go far. I don't know how you describe this. You keep talking about two guys top 75 NBA history, but there's just nothing there. And I know you're going to point to, oh, that was a great victory on New Year's Eve, but my response to that is that Indianapolis is just like us. They're an average team. They can go either direction. That's one comment. My second comment is that in between being disgusted with watching the Bucks game and who I didn't like on Johnny Carson, I watched the Minneapolis Celtics game. And here's what's disturbing to me. Now, I'm a true lover of the NBA. I remember sitting at the Mecca watching Kareem play with Oscar, and it was really great basketball. But when I talk to my friends and listen to a lot of people about sports, I think there's a real concern about where the league's going, and LeBron mentioned this. Tonight, in Minneapolis, there were 95-plus three-point shots. So that means all you got to do is run down, and shoot a three and run back. That's not what the game that people looked up and followed for years. When it used to be a great time, and I think you guys might have even been in diapers then when this happened, but every Friday night it was the Knicks and Bucks playing. And on Sundays it was Celtics and somebody else. And it was a true basketball game. Now it's something's wrong with the game. I think you're going to lose the marginal fan. I make those two comments, and I want to hear what you guys got to say.
Thanks for the call, Dick. I don't disagree with much of what you said in your first point. That you know, by the numbers, the Bucks have been an average team. When you look at the record, when you look at where the offense checks in, the defense, your net rating, everything that you're pointed to statistically is in line with teams that have been 500-ish teams, and that's the level the Bucks have played at. I mean, we can take out the 2-8 start all we want, but there's been blips other than that 2-8 start. Like, I do think Doc Rivers is right in that it felt like this team was really starting to click on all cylinders going into the NBA Cup tournament, but you got to sustain it, and I think it's you have more than half of your season left to get that part on track, but it is it's dangerously veering towards a path of the discussion that I think everybody is currently having, or most people are currently having, with a team that plays to the north. In that, look, you're a good team. You have a good record by the numbers. You've won some nice games. If you want to win your ultimate championship in your league, the teams you're going to need to beat to do that, those are all of your losses this season. And for the Bucks, you've turned this around. You're playing much better. Giannis and Damian Lillard look much better in tandem as a pairing here. But you're 0-6 against the Cavs and the Celtics. You're 0-7 against the top three teams with the Knicks. Like, at some point, you have to start beating those teams. And they've started to sprinkle in some wins against good teams. I mean, it doesn't count in the standings. But you beat the Oklahoma City Thunder, who have not lost since that game, and were on a winning streak going into it. They've won 13 straight games now. You were the team that went in there and beat them. Even the Hawks, they were playing very well. The Magic, despite the injuries, they've continued to play relatively well and played very tough in that game. So the Rockets, too. I don't want to miss that one. You've started to beat some good teams, but now that, to me, is going to be the tell. I mean, I think what I would say to that point, Dick, is I can't dispute what you've said by the numbers, but I think we'll really know who this team is starting in February, when that schedule shifts to basically every game that you have left to close out the season is against a team that's probably going to be in the playoffs. There are no Portlands and Wizards and Nets you're done with, like the Bulls. All of those types of teams are gone from the schedule once you get to February. So that's where we're really going to learn what we saw against the Thunder and what we saw during that Cup tournament. Is this what we can expect from this group? Like, we know what the ceiling is, but can they reach that ceiling? So I think that's where we'll start to get the answer. The second one. I mean, I don't know. I could not disagree more. Like, I'm not saying it is totally enjoyable to watch, but look, the numbers that you threw out for the three-point attempts in the game tonight, I think you also have to point out the rest of the story and not bury the lead here in that, well, the number was so high because the Celtics took 57 threes in that game. This wasn't two teams that were taking 45 to 50 threes. The Celtics almost took 60. That is the way the Celtics have constructed their offense. Every team in the league cannot play this way, and I'm not going to push back on if you were to suggest too many teams play this way. The Celtics can. They still shot near 40% on those 57 three-point attempts. That's how they have constructed their roster, and it's a copycat league. So you see more teams doing that. The Bulls are taking more threes than ever before. But this is also, I don't want to say a fad, but it goes in phases where somebody is going to find something else. Just when we thought, hey, not to compare things to football once again, but, well, it's a passing league now. There's no way around it. Look at the teams that have started to run the ball more and change their offense around that, because that is the inefficiency. Something's going to happen to swing that back. I think the logical piece would be addressing the three-point line, pushing it back, removing corner threes. Maybe that happens. I don't think taking out the corner three is going to give you the results you think it's going to intend, because it changes the overall spacing of the floor. The reason guys take so many threes in this game, do you know what it is, Brandon?
No.
Because there isn't a four-point shot. I mean, like, if this shot is worth more points, you should be taking more of those. The Celtics are built that way. Other teams are not. And that's the frustration. I get it. But I would also push back. Look, in the 80s, if you want to talk about that game, it was a much different game. Fine. I think people are quick to forget how rough this was of a watch. A lot of the early 2000s and 2010s, especially. We look back on that too fondly and don't really remember what the league truly was or how offenses evolved here. It is the most skilled players in the world playing this, where you think about how much the game has changed now. You don't have any Todd McCulloughs playing center that are just out there for six fouls a game and to get rebounds under the basket. Centers are dribbling the ball and shooting the ball. Like, it's the natural evolution of this game. So I get it. If you came up with the league, and I don't want to date Dick here, but if you're used to watching basketball, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, you think, well, what is this that I'm seeing now? But that's just the way the league goes. I mean, people were saying the same thing when guys started to dunk.
Yeah, I'm with you, Justin. I got two point of views on this. Number one, I mean, you don't have to look far at all outside of the NBA. What is the NFL doing? I mean, they want offense. It's impossible to play defense in the NFL. They want offense. They want numbers. Major League Baseball with the pitch clock. They want the game to speed up. They want, you know, that viewership to kind of tap in a little bit longer. I don't have an issue with the NBA and where it's going. I quite frankly, I don't think I'm as old as you, Justin. I'm not as old as Dick. But this is kind of, I grew up in the early 2000s, and this game is a little bit, you know, more entertaining, I think. So when you got 7-foot centers like Brook Lopez putting up a handful of threes a game and being able to change how teams play defense, I don't know. I think it's entertaining. The one thing that I will kind of, I guess, sort of agree on, Dick, he didn't really make this point, but I feel like he's probably feeling this way, is that the Adam Silver NBA is soft. Andre Jackson Jr. should not have been ejected tonight for that flagrant two. That was not a flagrant two. I've seen Giannis get fouled harder on a common foul probably 3 to 4 nights a week, Justin, than I saw Andre Jackson Jr. brought his hand and tried to...
We haven't touched on this one yet, so save that.
Yeah.
We'll get into the flagrant two.
Yeah, that's the only thing I think I would have, is that I think that there's two, you know, they tried to do a better job with the flopping. They started off really good. I believe it was last year, the year before, where they put that new rule in, but it seems to go right back to where it is now. That would be the only issue I have with the NBA right now, but I like the offense. I like the shooting. I think the pace of play, my 8-year-old, I should say 9-year-old, he turned 9 a couple weeks ago, he's tuning into these games, and I don't know if he's going to tune in, you know, 20 years ago if he was 9 years old and to watch these games, you know, where the pace wasn't as fast and as fun and guys are putting up shots. And I don't know. I can see both sides. I personally like it, Justin. You know, it's not going anywhere, that's for sure.
All right, the Andre Jackson Jr. flagrant two, we'll get into that conversation coming up after this. So in the final few minutes of the first half, this game, the Bucks lose 113-110 to the Brooklyn Nets. Andre Jackson Jr. ejected from this game for a flagrant two. So I gather, based on your comments last segment, you felt it was rather egregious, Brandon. In real time, I also thought flagrant two is a bit much. It was a flagrant foul. Mm-hmm. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I think what ultimately cost Andre Jackson Jr. was the tussle that he got into with Nick Claxton, where he was slapping his hands down literally seconds prior to that. And it was, you know, unfortunately for him, for Ajax, it was right in front of Musa Dagher, the official, who saw that happen and clearly said something to them. You know, like a parent telling their kids fighting in the backseat, knock it off. And then Andre Jackson Jr., I think to the naked eye, it looked like he was just trying to kind of squeeze his way through a screen and catches him with his hand in the face. But it was ruled a flagrant, too, that there was malicious intent and a windup there, and he's ejected from the game. Now, to be clear, I don't think that is the reason or a large reason why the Bucks lost this game.
Correct. I agree.
But in listening to Doc Rivers talk after the game, you got the sense Doc Rivers didn't have a huge problem with it. We've heard Doc Rivers sound off, and granted, you got to pick your spots, and you got to pick the players that you're willing to do it for. I don't know if Andre Jackson Jr. is there just yet. But Doc's comments were, I talked to him shortly after the play. I talked to him a little bit in the locker room, but it's one of those things where emotions are high. Revisit this conversation tomorrow. Like, that tells me Doc Rivers didn't think it was egregious. Thought, I think that's probably a flagrant one, but look, I can see why the officials are giving him that, and the I'll save it to talk to him tomorrow is probably the, hey, look, you got to cool it with the aggression on some of these plays. Like, guys are looking for this. Officials are looking for it. I would much rather have to coach aggressiveness down with a player than constantly urge them to have that. But I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much into it. What I took from Doc's comments, very brief comments about this after the game were, yeah, I mean, I didn't have a huge problem with it.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, and you're right. But I also think that Doc Rivers doesn't want another $25,000 fine. It's very possible that he thought it may have been the right call. In real time watching it, and then even the replay, I just didn't think, Justin, the definition of a flagrant two is unnecessary, which you can make the case that that was. But it says excessive contact. In the definition, according to the NBA rulebook, I don't know if that was excessive.
It was pretty excessive, but like the intent is the bigger part with the flag.
If it's not Claxton, but I believe that's who it was.
Yeah,
it doesn't hit him in the head or the face. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. We've seen Andre Jackson Jr. with his hands up high, where he tries to squeeze off, you know, that pick and roll, and I just didn't think, you know, it was necessary for a flagrant two. I could see a flagrant one. You know, without a doubt, and I even put that on my Twitter, I think that would have been fine. But to throw a guy out, and Claxton didn't even really have a response to it either. And maybe that was, you know, him being, you know, a veteran move on his part, not trying to get tangled up with, you know, anything else and give the Bucks some free throws as well. But I don't know. I've watched Giannis take more, you know, excessive hits and falls than I feel like Andre Jackson Jr. did tonight.
And I think the big part is this one you could kind of see starting to unfold. You could see Musa Dagher having some type of communication with Ajax as he's moving down the floor, and there is contact and a scuffling between he and Nick Claxton, that it just kind of seemed like a parent warning their child and then catching them immediately doing something that they told them not to do you're grounded now. What do you expect? Yeah. I told you not to do this. That was the feel I got from this. And again, just the way that Doc kind of handled that question reshaped a little bit of how I felt, because I thought in real time it's not a flagrant two. I think this is a bit excessive, but just hearing Doc's thoughts on it started to change that just a little bit here. So the Bucks had their chances, and that's kind of the theme of, we said, three tough losses here. Granted, two without Giannis and Damian Lillard in these past, 10 days here. All three of those were not only winnable games, they were games the Bucks were leading. Where in the case of this one, led in the first quarter, had a very strong chance to seize this one. There was a couple of moments that really stood out the most. What was the moment where you felt like, this is it? We'll get into that conversation coming up after this. A 13-110 final here. The Brooklyn Nets beat the Bucks, winning the season series 3-1. It was almost the biggest comeback the Bucks have had since early last season, when they came back from 26 down to beat the Portland Trail Blazers here at Fiserv Forum, who, by the way, is your next opponent at Fiserv Forum Saturday night in the Blazers. But, Brandon, it certainly started to get close. We said this on the radio broadcast. Look, if you can get this to 12 or 10 going into the fourth quarter, you feel pretty good. I think it was 11 going into that. They had a couple of opportunities early that you felt like may have been the death knell, where Damian Lillard missed a three. Gary Trent Jr. had one rattle out that would have made it a seven-point game. But then all of a sudden, they just started to chip away and went on a 20-0 run with that group, largely fueled by Pat Connaughton and Marjon Beauchamp, who were just out there for defense to help the Bucks get some stops. Dame starts to hit shots. Giannis is scoring in the paint as well. But there was plenty of opportunities, and that was kind of the similarity to this game and the loss last week, where Portland, the Nets gave you every chance to steal that game last week. You started to see more of the same tonight, but was there one singular play or missed shot where you felt like, that's it, it's over?
Like, over as in the Bucks are going to win this?
Did you have both feelings?
I had, when you mentioned at the start of the show, Justin, that Doc Rivers going to Pat Connaughton and Marjon Beauchamp were, you know,
you thought
big
of the Pat Connaughton dunk they're going to win?
I thought the block and then the dunk, yeah. And because that cut it within eight. Now, keep in mind, that was at the 253 mark.
Yeah.
Brooklyn hadn't scored until the 6:55 mark in that fourth quarter. So that was 4 minutes without them scoring, and the Bucks in the middle of that run. And when you get Pat Connaughton to block the three, and then he goes in for the dunk, you were there, Justin, the TV broadcast. It felt loud in that arena. And that at very next possession for Brooklyn, Cam Thomas missed a shot. Yeah. Bucks get the rebound. So I was like, man, there's almost 3 minutes left. I thought that was going to be the point for the Bucks to take the lead. And then, obviously, when Giannis missed the dunk, I kind of figured that was it.
Brooklyn did not score for nearly 7 minutes.
That's insane.
It was 111-90 with 6:55 left. They did not score again until Zaire Williams hit those two free throws with 6.1 seconds remaining. Yet when Damian Lillard, I had a few of those moments too, but when Dame had that layup with 37 seconds left is when I felt like, I can't believe they're actually going to win this game. And just the presence of mind for Damian Lillard to know in that spot, we don't need a three. We just need a basket. And Brooklyn's defense is not set. I see an opening. I'm just going to the hole and scoring here. Like, once that happened is when I really felt like, wow, I can't believe they're going to win this game. I don't remember where it was. It was a minute or so earlier than that when Giannis missed the dunk. That would have given or would have sliced the lead down to, I think, 4. It did seem like, as you're watching it unfold, he leaped a little early, started the jump just a little bit early. But, you know, we've seen Giannis throw those down before. When he missed the layup, though, was when you could just sense all the air was deflated out of the building here in Fiserv Forum. I do have one other question about the way the Bucks closed this game. And, look, it's... it is the epitome of nitpicking, but we'll open up that can of worms and wrap things up after this. 113-110, the final. The Brooklyn Nets beat the Bucks tonight inside of Fiserv Forum as we're starting to wrap things up here on Bucks Talk. And Brandon, I said there's one last thing I did want to briefly hit on, and I acknowledge this is to some extent nitpicking, but the final two cracks that the Bucks had at it, I suppose I did kind of question this on the air as it was happening with 6.1 seconds, but I was proven wrong with what Doc Rivers drew up on that first of the sideline out-of-bounds plays, where you had Giannis darting to the rim as if you were just going to go for, all right, let's get him the lob to score, and I think that caught Brooklyn off guard to think, wait a minute, what are they doing here? It's a three-point game. They seemed to freeze. It allowed Giannis to catch the ball cleanly and get Damian Lillard coming off a screen and get a good look that just didn't drop. But, again, as we say, the Nets just gave you all these opportunities. They step out of bounds on the rebound. You get one more crack. Giannis either has to be the inbounder or cannot be on the floor. You're allowing Brooklyn to play 5-on-4 when they know with 0.6 seconds remaining, you need a three. This guy isn't taking it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I was kind of yelling about that at the TV because I think the Bucks were caught a little bit off guard too, Justin, the way they were defending him. I mean, they were giving him anything in the paint, really anything inside that three-point line. So, again, once Damian Lillard missed that first attempt, which, again, I thought was a fantastic, you know, out-of-the-timeout play, you know, despite that, the referees, or I guess Brooklyn gave the Bucks a gift, I didn't have any hope that that was going to be a good shot that they were going to get off. And the opportunity was there with Damian Lillard, your best shooter, you know, with a really good look late in the game. And unfortunately, just shots just didn't fall tonight.
Just didn't go tonight. Chance to redeem themselves on Saturday night when the Portland Trailblazers come here to Fiserv Forum. That is a 7 o'clock tip. 6:30 is when our pregame coverage begins. And as always, be sure to stick around after the game for Bucks Talk. We will talk with you then. Start the